96.1 and 1270.
Be careful, we're getting snow again today. It's our little version of the polar vortex. Stay inside and listen to CBS Sports Radio, 96.1, 1270 worldwide, even indoors, even on your smartphone. You can download the mobile app or just listen on your computer at renosportsradio.com. My name is Notch. How you doing? Great show today. It's the last time I'm going to talk to you before the Super Bowl on Sunday, so Super Bowl prop bet a palooza coming up later on today. We're going to go over a whole bunch of the more ridiculous, some serious and some really ridiculous prop bets that are out there, and there are some out there. It's an event, though, especially in this state. It's a gambling event. Reno Aces manager Phil Nevin. I'll be talking with him about 9:15 this morning, and I'll be listening for that. Your core temperature, your body core temperature kind of warms up about 5 degrees when you talk about baseball. So since the weather's getting a little bit colder, I think it's a good thing. It's a public service thing to get Phil Nevin on. We can talk some ace ball. Once again, that's at about 9:15 this morning. And of course, more from our buddy, the Seahawks fan. If you don't think Marshawn Lynch is stoned, if you think this is how he really is, you got to call and tell me. Because I'm really worried about Marbon Lynch. Marbon Lynch was at it again yesterday. It wasn't the official Super Bowl media day festivities, but there were microphones, there were cameras. He was still laid back and chill. Way too much for someone that's supposed to be playing in a championship game coming up in a few days. I've got more Marbon Lynch audio. Seahawk fan, you're going to want to hear that. All coming up this hour. Starting off with the Wolfpack last night. I told you it was a winnable game at Lawler against Colorado State. I went to the game. I wanted to see firsthand this team that I've been talking about lately. There were things I liked. There were things I didn't like. But like I said before the game, winnable game. Colorado State came in. Nevada, 5-point lead at the half. They won 76-67. They covered the 3-point spread. They were 3-point favorites in the game. I said the play was under 139.5. It was looking good at halftime. It was only 33-28 at the break. Very fast moving, very fast paced, very quick first half. The second half, it was like rush hour traffic with all the whistles. The referees wanted to make sure you didn't forget that they were there. Both teams were in the double bonus with about 10 minutes to go in the game. And the game went over 139.5 with 58 seconds to go on a foul shot, of course. 76-67, 143 total points. The reason why it was a foul fest, I think, in the second half was because of both teams' complete inability and, in one team's case, total unwillingness almost to shoot the three-pointer. Unless they really had to, and especially at the end. Colorado State, a terrible three-point shooting team. For most of the game, they were passing up even open looks from the three-point arc. They ended up 3 of 18 from 3. They took about a half dozen of them in the final 30 seconds of the game when they're losing by 7 points. So that kind of skews the stats. But their top scorer, J.J. Avila, he fouled out during the game. He only had 12 points. They D'd up on him pretty good. Big, tall guy. The guards, though, with the dribble-drive penetration all game, Daniel Bejarano, poor shooting game, but he took a lot of shots, so he had 17 points. And John Octius was their leading scorer. They ran a three-guard offense. It's hard to, it's, you know how hard it is to have a three-guard offense where you're starting three guards and two forwards and you stink at three-point shooting? How hard is that to do? Octius, a lot of dribble drive penetration, 12 for 12 from the foul line. It wasn't a size advantage either because Colorado State had a definite size advantage over the Wolfpack. But they, I mean, it drove me nuts because whenever the Wolfpack were in man-to-man, they were getting layups. It was always a dribble drive, maybe a dish in the paint. About 90% of their points came from within 10 feet of the basket. But it wasn't a size issue because a lot of times the lane would just open up. Deontay Burton would get swallowed whole on picks. A couple times he got completely just vaporized on a pick play. And the lane just opens wide up. And one of their guards, slashing guards, just right in for the layup. When they played zone, when the Wolfpack actually played zone, they caused some problems for Colorado State. They forced some turnovers, some bad passes, forced some bad shots. The big guys were actually there in the paint, so when they tried the dribble drive, guess what happened? You had A.J. West with a pair of blocks on one sequence. Of course, with the size advantage for Colorado State after A.J. with the two blocks, he still saw him convert a layup because after the two blocks, someone from Colorado State just got the ball and just laid it in. 76-67, you can't treat your zone defense like it's fine china. That was the thing that irked me the entire game. The people around me were probably just totally sick of me talking about, you know, the zone defense. When you have a team that that thrives from 10 feet and in, you can't run the trap either. I don't know why they're running the trap as much as they were, because the trap, when you run a trap defense, if you're not getting turnovers, it leads to easy baskets on the other end for the team that's beating the trap. And Colorado State wasn't a jump shooting team at all in this game. So the trap and the man-to-man defense, someone had to tell the Nevada coaches, someone should have told the Nevada coaches before the game, hey, just play zone defense and make them shoot threes. They stink at shooting threes. When they did play good defense, they were excellent. Colorado State only shot 37% from the field, 3 of 18 from threes. If you take the threes away from Colorado State, they shot 45% from the field, 19 of 42. And like I said, they got a lot of their baskets. They're little guys. Because you had guys on man-to-man that were just getting beat off the dribble. It was a speed issue as much as it was a size issue. So they simultaneously played great defense and terrible defense in that game. I like the Wolfpack. I like Deontay Burton, who, by the way, congratulations to him, the third Nevada Wolfpack basketball player to surpass 1,900 career points in his career. Congratulations to Deontay. He plays point for the Wolfpack. I'm assuming he only plays point because they don't really have a pure point guard. It's more of a necessity thing than anything else. He's by far their best athlete, their best player, and their best ball handler. So because of that, he has to play the point. Deontay Burton, if he's ever going to have a pro career, if he's ever going to play in the league, he's got to be a two guard. He is not. You can't have a point guard that averages less than 4 assists a game in the NBA. That doesn't translate well. What does translate well for Deontay Burton, I really like his ability to create his own shot. He is very, very good at creating his own shot. He is excellent at doing that, did it several times. He's a playmaker. He's a two guard. Unfortunately, he's got to play point for the Wolfpack. He does one thing that irks me, though. The Wolfpack ran a lot of NBA-style offense, and by that I mean a lot of one-on-one isolation, very little movement off the ball. Deontay Burton, a lot of times, more times than I could count, he'd go off in his little quadrant in the half-court set offense. It'd be behind the three-point line, off on the imagine you're watching the game on TV and you have the scores table, he'd be on the lower half of the half court offense behind the 3-point line. And there are times he'd just stand there. And no one was within 10 feet of him. No Ram players within 10 feet of him. So that's something he's got to work on. Just because you want to play in the league, don't do that crappy one-on-one isolation stuff like in the league where you're making it 4-on-5 for the rest of your teammates. But Deontay led the team 18 points. Really good free throw shooting. They were 75% free throw shooting for the game, which has been one of their bugaboos. The Wolfpack have always they've always struggled at the foul line. They were excellent at the foul line. They had some good plays. Michael Perez had a rough game. Led the team in assists, though, with 6. So even though he wasn't shooting the ball well, Michael Perez actually led the team in assists. He showed up. You contribute something other than scoring. When you can't score, quality players have to contribute in other ways. Michael Perez did that. Cole Huff had a big game, especially from the foul line. 12 points. Like I said, it was a foul fest in the second half, and I think that contributed. I think it made the whole dribble drive thing even worse than it was, not just for Colorado State, but for Nevada, because they abandoned jump shooting as well, because the referees pretty much have the whistle in their mouth ready to blow it. A lot of inside play, a lot of dribble drive penetration on both games, both teams. Very athletic game. Jerry Evans Jr., excellent game for him. A.J. West, 9 boards to go with 12 points. 5-7 shooting. Jerry Evans, 3-6 from 3. Excellent time for the Wolfpack, who are now above 500 again. They are NIT eligible, but we're not going to talk about tournaments. Let's just enjoy the team as they are. If you'd like to enjoy the team, Saturday, the Wolfpack are playing Air Force at the Lawler Event Center at 305. You need to come out and support your team. That was something else I didn't like, because I know it's a Wednesday night. I know the weather was crappy. It was rainy last night. But come on, you got to come out and support your team. There's maybe about 4,000 people there last night. Hard to get a home field advantage. Maybe that's why they're better on the road, actually, because there's very little home field advantage. Got to come out and support them, especially on the weekend. Don't worry about the weather. It's an indoor game. It's not the Winter Classic of Mountain West college basketball. I'm going to give away a pair of tickets for the Wolfpack game coming up later on this hour. Going to take a quick break. Going to come back. We're going to warm up. We're going to think spring. Forget about the snow that's coming this weekend. We're thinking spring with some ace ball. That's next. This is CBS Sports Radio.
Northern Nevada's new home for sports. 96.1 and 1270. CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio, Sports Buffet, Notch. All right, taking a break from football, Wolfpack, winter. Wouldn't you like to get away to a place where it's warm? Springtime, baseball, more importantly, ace ball, just around the corner. With me on the phone right now, he's a former number one overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft, 12 years in the big leagues. Been in the College World Series. He's been a broadcaster, and now he's the manager of your Reno Aces, Phil Nevin. Phil, if I left anything out.
I think you got a lot covered.
All right. Well, what do they call you? What do your players call you? Do they call you skipper, skip, chief, boss, or something else?
I think it just kind of varies on the player. I'll go by anything. Phil, Nev, Javik, Skip, whatever. They all work.
What was your main nickname when you were a player?
Nev. Everybody just shortens up the last name, it seems like, for a lot of guys. And Nev, that's really what all the guys called me. I mean, I'm sure a ton of other names I've been called, but I probably can't disclose those at this time.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing. I can relate to that, actually, because I go by Notch on the radio here, and that's the nickname I've had since high school, because it's a variation of my last name. So yeah, I can. The thing they do now a lot of times is they do the A-Rod type nicknames, or what they do is they put a Y at the end, so you'd be Nevy if you were playing this year. Yeah,
yeah, Trevor. That's what Trevor Hoffman calls me. He's really the only one. My mom when I was younger, Duck. I don't know where that came from. Filthy, I get that a lot. Just
Filthy?
Kind of names you make out of that. Yeah, just some crazy guy that's named Phil. That's
oh, okay, I get it now. I get
one
it.
That goes, yeah.
So you're taking over the Reno Aces this year. How would you describe your managerial style? You've been a manager before with the Tigers system. Are you what they call a player's manager?
You know, I don't. That's probably questions you got to ask my players. I understand how tough this game is. I played it, obviously. Been around it a while. We all still are learning things every day. I mean, I think I took that as a player. That you know, every time I came to the park to get better, you're trying to learn something new each day. You know, but as far as those questions, those are things you probably should ask, you know, my players, the guys that have played for me. You know, for me, it's you come out and you play hard and just be yourself. I mean, those are really the only things I kind of stress. Obviously, the on-field and teaching mechanics of things are, you know, everybody has their own style. I think if you create a positive atmosphere, make it the surroundings as comfortable as possible for your players to be able to perform and succeed. I think those are the, you know, in the past when I've, the managers I've played for, those are the guys that that I enjoyed being around the most, I should say.
Who are some of the managers who have influenced you the most over your career?
You know, I was very lucky. I got a chance to play for some great ones. You know, starting with Sparky Anderson, as soon as I got to Detroit, Buddy Bell was there just after Sparky. Bruce Bochy, for me, is obviously somebody I spent a lot of time with, you know, 7 years with the Padres, and a good friend now. We still talk a lot. I reach out to him for advice on many occasions still. And I was fortunate. I got to play for a lot of good ones. You know, I go on from Boach. I was with Ron Gardenhire, Dusty Baker, Terry Collins, Buck Showalter, a lot of guys that I... every manager, I think, creates their own style, but you take little bits and pieces from each guy, and maybe it's negative things that you didn't like that you remember. I was fortunate; I got to play for a lot of great men, a lot of great coaches around me, and you take little bits and pieces from each guy and create your own style, so to speak.
How much, you mentioned the word teaching earlier, how much of what you do as a manager is teaching? How much of that do you delegate to, like, your assistant coaches, your hitting coach, your pitching coach? Because whenever I think of the manager, I think of the guy that pretty much oversees everything, the big picture guy, the guy that just has the one-on-one and gets the players' heads right. How much actual teaching of fundamental things do you do with the players right now?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, in the minor leagues, it's different than what you see on TV and in the major leagues. You know, there's a lot of hands-on. There's a lot of teaching that goes on. And that's really part of the game that's part of my job that I really enjoy. I enjoy being on the field with the player. There's extended hours, I should say, at the minor league level. You're still developing, and, you know, not that you don't at the major league level, but I really enjoy that part of it, being around the player and being on the field and kind of the more hands-on stuff that obviously the in-game running a game is stuff that everybody's been around, but I really enjoy being on the field with the players and teaching. I mean, that to me, making guys better, you know, you're giving back to the game that's given me so much in my life. For me, that's the enjoyment out of it I get is watching guys get better on your clock.
Especially multiple positions, because you played catcher and third base, mostly outfield too in your career, right?
I did. I came up obviously as an infielder, third base, where I was drafted as. But yes, I spent some time going back behind the plate, basically to keep the job. But something that taught you a different part of the game. You see it from a different vantage point. Definitely a big learning lesson for me, but. I caught it. I played first, and then made the transition a little bit to the outfield. I DH'd some, so you know, you can kind of relate to a lot of different guys on the field. For the most part, everybody except for the pitcher.
As someone that's played catcher before, and as someone that is teaching the future catchers, especially in the Diamondbacks organization, what's your opinion about the new rules? Well, it's actually, I don't know if it's a new rule or if it's just increased enforcement of an existing rule about blocking the plate, home plate collisions?
Well, I think it's good. I mean, when it first was talked about, you know, I kind of had, you know, a lot of questions that have since been answered. You know, the main thing is protecting all the ball guys. You don't want to see anybody get carted off the field or anything like that. But it goes both ways. You know, everybody's kind of leaning towards they're pointing at the Buster Posey play and him getting hurt. Well, I think if you watch the replay and you see how catchers are taught to block the plate, Buster was just in a bad position. That being said, you know, the runner took a pretty aggressive route towards Buster, and I see that. But, you know, it goes both ways. You don't want runners, base runners, getting injured, sliding into a catcher with the shin guards that are blocking the plate and breaking ankles that way. You also don't want, you know, the catchers getting blasted when they shouldn't. I mean, I think it's a give and take on both sides. I mean, there's better ways to create outs at home plate from the catcher's standpoint, and I think there's better ways to approach crossing home plate from the runner standpoint. And I think the rules are gonna help out and teach both guys really better ways to go about that play.
We're talking with Reno Aces manager and 12-year Major League Baseball veteran Phil Nevin. He's with us now on CBS Sports Radio. And Phil, how do you get players in the minor leagues to buy into the team concept when it can sometimes hurt their stats, which ultimately can affect when you look at the big picture, you know, you look at the stats, that affects who gets promoted to the next level. How do you get players to buy into that team concept, the moving the runner over when it hurts their batting average? How do you talk to them about that?
Well, you know, that's a good question as well, but that is also part of development. I mean, you know, it's a statistic world, of course, and, you know, when moves are to be made and players go up, players go down, that's the first thing everybody looks at. But that's also part of our job as player development. You know, when I'm called and asked about a player, you know, what kind of guy is he? Because at the end of the day, you know, as you move along through the minor leagues, I firmly believe that, you know, the way a guy acts, the way a guy performs, the way a guy goes about his business, he may change for a little bit when he gets to the big leagues, but eventually that guy is going to come out. And you just stress it. I mean, it's, you know, the thing I like about this this organization that I've seen so far, there's an emphasis on winning and winning through the minor leagues. And I firmly believe that develops winning players when they get to the major leagues. And, you know, there's statistically oriented stuff in the major leagues, too. I mean, it's at all levels, high school, college. But I think that, you know, the more you stress a team concept, sure, you do talk about it. There's ways to win games. You know, there's no, obviously, point for getting guys over, things like that, but they don't go unnoticed. I mean, somebody's watching you every day, whether it's a scout in the stands or your manager, your coaches, and everybody gets that concept.
Winning is addictive. It's habit-forming. You know, you can learn how to win, or you can continue to do things that, you know, some teams, you see some teams, and you just know they're going to lose in the eighth or ninth inning just because that's just, they have that certain, they don't have that intangible. Is that part of it? Can you teach that? Can you teach
you're
the intangible?
Right. I mean, I think that's taught at younger ages. I really do. I mean, I think players that, guys just don't get this. I mean, there's a handful of dudes that don't just go to AAA based on talent. There's a lot of things. Everybody's talented. You sign a professional baseball contract, but, you know, a lot of those guys are extremely talented. And it thins itself out. It really does. The guys that are going to be successful on down the line, all those things kind of thin themselves out, and the cream rises to the top. I'm not to be a cliche guy, but those guys are figured out pretty short amount of time once you get to professional baseball, and especially the level I'm at.
How much, for lack of a better term, input does the parent team usually give the managers of the affiliates? Stuff like pitch counts for pitchers or certain prospects, they want to have them get more at-bats. How much autonomy do you have as a manager? How much can you run the team? How often do they say, you know, maybe you should do this a little more or less?
Well, I think each organization's run different. You have your coordinators for the hitters, the pitchers, infielders, outfielders, catchers. And that is dictated by those guys, sure. But, yes, you know, you're going to be careful with your arms. You know, there is certain pitch counts. There's days when guys can and can't throw. And that all comes down from the top, sure. But we monitor it. We obviously make the decisions in-game on those situations. You know, it's just development, but we're not going to hurt anybody. And we're going to make sure they're ready on down the line in the future when those opportunities arise to go to the major league level or go to the next level. Those are things we take into consideration with each guy. So
it's Phil Nevin, Reno Aces manager here on CBS Sports Radio. And we hear on the news lately, this has been about football with all the NFL hiring, coach hirings. But for example, like team brings in certain person for interview or for second interview. I don't know how much of this has to stay confidential with you and the Aces, but take us through the process from the inside as to the hiring process, becoming a manager. I mean, do you have to apply like someone like me or someone like a listener has to apply for like a regular job? Do you have a resume that you have to give them or something?
How does that work? Baseball world is a little different. First of all, I'm hired by the Diamondbacks, not the Reno Aces. You know, they do those kind of things. I've gotten to obviously know the people in Reno. I'm excited to work with all of them, some great people within that with that club there. But I work for the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you talk about the resume process. I mean, the baseball resume is what it is. I mean, you can look up online what guys have done and where they've been, but I think that a lot of it is word of mouth. You know, I'm sure, you know, employers call former employers. Everybody seems to know a lot of people, you know, within our sport.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, you know, a lot of word of mouth stuff. You know, I'm sure that the Diamondbacks people knew people with the Detroit people and, you know, asked about myself and the way I go about my business. I did obviously talk sort of an interview process with Arizona. They talked to many guys, and it's just that's just like any job. It's part of the hiring process.
All right. I know you're a California guy. Have you gotten settled in Northern Nevada yet?
Well, I've been up there. You know, I'll rent a place for during the season. First things first, we go to spring training and get everybody ready to go before we head up there. But I have been in the Reno area quite a bit in the past, and once this winter, I'm actually going to be up there tomorrow to just kind of get the keys to my house and see what I got, where I'm at up there, just for the day. But really got to get ready for spring training first, and when the season starts, we'll make that trek up there and have a great summer in Reno. I'm looking forward to it.
About when do you think you're going to know the players on the roster? Is that something where the Diamondbacks are going to send guys down from their spring training camp?
I mean, we have an idea. We have ideas of who will be where and doing certain things. Not to say those rosters are in ink yet, but, you know, we go over players. There will be a lot of evaluating during spring training, a lot of jobs to be won. But for the most part, you know, you can look through the organization. I'm sure there's ideas of where guys may go, and obviously, it has a lot to do with the big league team. Injuries at the major league level, moves are still, you know, a lot of things can happen before the end of the spring, you know, with injuries and things like that. But you kind of get an idea in place as you come into camp, and, you know, there's competition for jobs, and you make those decisions at the end of the spring.
AAA is pretty unique as far as the minor league system goes because you have a split between guys coming up from AA and the guys that were in the bigs and came down. What do you think the percentage traditionally is between guys coming up from AA and guys coming down from the bigs on a AAA roster?
Yeah. First thing you said is AAA is unique. It is unique. You know, you're dealing with a lot of different personalities. Obviously, nobody wants to play in the major leagues. Nobody wants to play in the minor leagues. So you're one step away. You're that close. And, you know, it's a frustrating level of baseball to play at, to be honest with you. There's a lot of guys that have been in the major league, so they have that taste, and they're fighting to get back. And sometimes that makes those 0-for-4s and 0-for-8s and 0-for-12s feel like they're dragging out a long time because then it feels further away. And then on the other hand, you get guys that are, you know, really swinging the bats well and want to know when their turn is. Well, I mean, a lot of times, sometimes that doesn't happen. And, you know, that's part of your job is dealing with personalities. Each guy on the field, you learn your team, and you know, like I said, it's a frustrating level of baseball, and it's our job to keep those guys on an even keel so when their time does come, they get that opportunity, they're ready to play.
You hear the term 4A players that dominate AAA, but then when they get their shot with the big club, they struggle. You know, they're too good for AAA, but the imaginary 4A level, do you consider that to be a complimentary term for those type of players, or is that a backhanded compliment?
Well, I mean, it's listen.
Because they're still good baseball players, regardless.
Yeah, listen. Playing in the major leagues is it's difficult. It's the best in the world, and it's a jump. I mean, it's a different level of competition between AAA and the major leagues. And there's some guys that make that adjustment, and when another level of the stadium's added, so to speak, they're able to compete and perform just like they did in AAA. And obviously it's talent, but I think a lot of that is the mental side of the game that some guys have, some guys don't. And there's not a knock on a guy that's a 4A player. These guys are making having a lot of fun and playing baseball and making a heck of a living nowadays in the minor leagues. But like I said, it's a large jump. It's a jump from rookie ball to A ball to double A to AAA. And like I said earlier, the cream rises to the top, and I think each level weeds out the players that are going to make it to the major leagues. And at our level, you see that.
Right, the Olympics are coming up. You have a firsthand account from the Olympics because you were in Barcelona in 92 on the U.S. baseball team. With the Sochi Olympics coming up, what can we expect from the Olympians? What's going through their mind? What do they go through when they're not competing? Just give us little insider account of what the Olympic experience is like.
Yeah, first of all, to represent your country and to go over there with all the athletes was a huge thrill of mine. Something that I've taken with me, stories to tell, and teammates and friends I had over there, something I take with me the rest of my life. Our sport's a little different. There's some. And all whether there's some events and sports that people train 4 years for and for the Olympics. Obviously we have with baseball, you have the major leagues and the minor leagues and college, and you're playing year round. I know those people are competing, but their big thing is the Olympics. So when you see somebody like a Lindsey Vonn who gets hurt and not able to go, you really feel for that person because you know that. They do all their training and competitions just lead to for this one event that only happens every 4 years, and you really feel for somebody like Lindsey that's not able to go now for an injury, but to represent your country and do something you love with USA across your chest and competing against other countries, there's just really nothing like it.
All right, getting ready for some ace ball coming up here. First game is April 3rd against El Paso. Of course, you can buy tickets at the Aces Ballpark box office or RenoAces.com. Phil Nevin, congratulations on being named the new manager for the team. Can't wait to see your boys in action this year.
All right, thank you very much.
Great talk. Looking forward to the ace ball this year. Phil Nevin knows his stuff. You know anything about Phil Nevin, by the way? This is your chance. I'm going to go to a break real quick so we can get the Super Bowl prop bet of Palooza in. But don't be afraid to call me during the break so I can get you set up so you can win these Nevada Wolfpack tickets for Saturday against Air Force, 823-1920. All I have to do is answer a little Phil Nevin trivia for me. Can you do that for me? Just call me right now. Taking a quick break at CBS Sports Radio.
96.1 and 1270.
All right, back in Super Bowl mode now here at CBS Sports Radio, 96.1, 1270, with a little Reno Ace Freely. Seahawks Broncos is still 2.5 Denver. Nothing's changed me on that, by the way. Phil Nevin trivia for tickets, 823-1920. Bob, you know anything about Phil Nevin?
Phil Nevin, well... My younger brother played on the same Little League team as Phil in Placentia, California.
Small world, huh?
It's pretty cool. Phil's dad was the coach, and my dad was a youth coach and everything. And he didn't like most youth coaches, but he said Phil's dad. And, Phil was like a superstar at 12. And he said, my dad always said Phil's dad treated everybody so fairly, and he never favored his son or any of that. And, you know, hopefully, I'm sure Phil's got some of those same attributes. So,
all right.
Yeah.
So you're saying you know a little bit about Phil Nevin?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, for a pair of tickets to the Wolfpack game Saturday against Air Force, tell me three of the seven teams that he played for in his major league career.
Let's see, the San Diego Padres.
That's one.
The Arizona Diamondbacks. Is that two?
No, it's not two.
How about the Cleveland Indians?
Sorry, Bob. Sorry.
Notch! Oh, I had to hit all three in a row?
No, but you can't just guess every team in Major League Baseball until you hit three.
Let's see, the Padres. Okay, well, I tried.
Let me take Pat on line two. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Okay, Notch. Thanks, man.
All right, Pat, can you name three of the seven teams that Phil Nevin has played for in his Major League career?
Padres, Detroit, and the Twins.
Minnesota Twins. His only playoff appearance, his only Major League Baseball postseason appearance, by the way, with my Minnesota Twins in 2006. Pat, congratulations. What's your last name?
Ellis, E-L-L-I-S.
You're going to the Wolfpack game against Air Force on Saturday. Hopefully they play as well as they did last night.
Terrific. Thank you.
Pat, got to be listening. Got to talk about your boy Marshawn, Marbong Lynch.
Not my boy.
You're not a Seahawks fan?
No way, man.
I thought you were Pat the Seahawk fan, Pat.
No, I'm the other Pat.
You're the other Pat.
I'm one of the other Pat.
You're not 12th man Pat. You're
no.
Okay. No, I get all you guys confused with the same first names and stuff.
You mean the Seahawks? I'm sorry.
Pat, you got to pick these tickets up, homie, at the station. You know where we are?
Yeah, I know where you are.
All right, cool. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, buddy.
You bet. Bye.
All right. Yeah. I could see why he'd be offended if I assumed he was a Seahawks fan, and he's not. Marbong Lynch. By the way, Brandon Iambadejo, former Raven and Bear, who's played in the Super Bowl, has said that teammates smoked marijuana before one of his games, Super Bowl games. He won't identify which players or which team, but he said, yeah. I just remember getting off the elevator one night. It was early on in the week, just starting the week off, and all of a sudden I got hit over the head with the fumes on the entire floor of the hotel that the team was staying on. I could just imagine there were a few young guys just toking it up in more than one room. Marshawn Lynch, Marbong Lynch, was at it again yesterday as there were cameras and microphones, and he was a little reticent again. Because, of course, being rich and famous doesn't involve actually having to fulfill the obligations of being rich and famous. He says, I appreciate it of the media's presence and desire to speak with them, but I just don't get it. I'm just here so I don't get fined. And then he had Michael Robinson, his fullback on the Seahawks, join him for a little bit of interviewing. And I got some Jodeci music because every Marbong Lynch interview is good with Jodeci music, too. Listen.
Marshawn, did you consider just paying the fine and not showing up?
I'm here, man, so I don't got to pay the fine, boss.
Boss. Richard Sherman says he's going to try to teach you how to be more expansive and to talk a little more. Is that going to happen?
Right here. I got you.
No, boss.
That's a back dog. I got you.
Boss, I'm understanding you're a private person, but you're very highly visible in something that you're very skilled at. How
and you
hard
see
is that?
What it do, right?
Yes, I do. So how hard is that to balance, though?
It's not.
Why?
Because it's not. I don't have a problem with it. I'm not the one with the problem with it. The people that, the 12s that I play for on Sunday don't got a problem with it. The media has a problem with it.
That's right, the media has a problem with it. It's the media's fault for trying to provide information for everyone. Damn that media that's helping you get that Skittles endorsement. You know, if the Broncos defense doesn't shut Marbong Lynch down on Sunday, it's probably going to be the guy with the plastic cup before Sunday that'll shut Marbong Lynch down before the Super Bowl on Sunday. Got to get ready for those prop bets. I found the Marshawn Lynch over-under prop bet for rushing yards. It's 87.5. I would definitely go under 87.5 with Marbong Lynch Sunday in the Super Bowl. There's quite a list of them. We're going to go over these right now. This is the last chance I have to talk to you before the Super Bowl. So let's go over. There's a long list here. I'm going to give you my insight on some of these. You can agree or disagree. It's up to you. Will it snow during the game? Yes is plus 300 or 3-1. No is minus 500. I'd take yes on that. Take the yes on it snowing during the Super Bowl. The over-under of kickoff temperature, 34 degrees. I'd go over on that. But the over-under on lowest temperature during the game, I'd go under 31 degrees. Will the power go out in the stadium during the game? 25-1 if you bet yes, but I wouldn't touch that at all. How long will it take Renee Fleming to sing the national anthem? Even money if she goes over 230. It's minus 140 on the money line if she goes under 230. I take the over in even money just because. And a lot of times, you know, you take the better money line odds because you never know with some of these things. Will Renee Fleming forget or omit at least one word of the national anthem? Yes is plus 250, but I'd take the no. I wouldn't actually bet minus. I'm not going to bet anything minus 400 just because there's really no payoff when you have to bet $4 to win one. So I wouldn't touch that. However, will she wear gloves when she starts singing the national anthem? Minus 200 for yes, and I would bet that if I were going to bet on that, but I'm not going to bet that. But I'm just saying that's the play if you're going to do that. If Renee Fleming wears gloves when she starts singing the national anthem, what color would the gloves be? Since I'm betting that she would wear gloves. White is 5-4. Black is 3-2. Red is 4-1. Any other color is 3-1. I would go any other color at 3-1 because you've got both teams wear blue-based uniforms. I think she wears blue-based gloves. Get 3-1 for that. Got to jump on it. Will no Sean Moreno cry during the national anthem? Yes is plus 400, and he's shown the waterworks before. He's an emotional guy. He's not as laid back and chill as Marbong Lynch is, so take the 400 plus 400, the 4-1 odds on yes. How many times will Peyton Manning say Omaha during the Super Bowl? The over-under is 27.5. For some reason, I'm going to take the under on this because I don't think, well, because everybody's talking about Omaha now. Misdirection. He might come up with something else. God knows what the something else would be, but I think he'd come up with something else. How many times will they show Archie Manning during the game? 2.5 is the over-under. Over. Take the over on that. How many times will they show Eli on TV during the game? Over. Go over 3.5. They're going to Manning it up. Which will be said more during the game? The reference to the Broncos being the best offense or the Seahawks being the best defense? They're both minus 110. It's basically a straight bet. I'd say the Seahawks because they're going to want to talk about the Seahawks a lot. Same with which coach will be mentioned first by name after kickoff. Go with Pete Carroll over John Fox. Who's going to be first seen on TV? You got Aaron Andrews at minus 140. Pam Oliver at even money. I'd take Pam Oliver at even money because she's got the seniority. They're going to have one of them on each sideline. I just go with Pam Oliver because the payoff's better. It's basically a coin flip. It's almost literally a coin flip. So always take the better money line odds on the coin flip. Will Michael Crabtree mention Richard Sherman in a tweet during the Super Bowl from kickoff until final whistle? Yes is plus 150. No is minus 200. I want to say no, but I'd have to bet yes just because. Michael Crabtree needs to stay relevant. How many times will they say 12th man during the game? This must be a typo from the CBS Sports website because it says over under 2.5. 22.5, I'd still bet over. So 2.5, I'll bet over 2.5. Same with beast mode. This must be a typo. How many times will the words beast mode be said during the game? The over-under is 2. Must be a typo because I'd go over-under 22 on that. Will the announcers say the word marijuana during the game? They may say something similar to it, but they're not going to say the word marijuana itself. Yes is plus 550 if you're feeling frisky on that. The no is minus 900. Will the announcers refer to Russell Wilson being drafted in Major League Baseball? Take the yes on this. You get plus 150 on the money line. Just for them, just throwing out a little mention, because they love to do that biographical stuff for the casual fan. They love to do that during the Super Bowl, because Russell Wilson drafted by the Colorado Rockies, I believe. Or was it the Texas Rangers? And he's now with the Rockies. This is why I'm hoping they do this, so I can get it straight. Because I'm too lazy to go on Wikipedia. Will Bruno Mars and the Chili Peppers play a song on the stage at the same time? Yes is minus 200. No is minus 150. I think they will. Which song will Bruno Mars perform first? Take Locked Out of Heaven at 3-1. He's not going to do a slow song. He might do Treasure. Locked Out of Heaven is his biggest hit, so he's going to do Locked Out of Heaven. That's almost the biggest lock of Super Bowl Sunday, is that Bruno Mars will do Locked Out of Heaven first. He's not going to do Grenade at 5-2. Don't bet. Grenade at 5-2 is a sucker bet. Just the way you are at 6-1 is a sucker bet. Any slow song, like the Lazy Song at 10-1, sucker bet. It's going to be an upbeat song. Treasure's 2-1. It's either going to be Treasure or Locked Out of Heaven, but I take Locked at 3-1. That's a lock. What will Bruno Mars wear on his head at the start of his halftime performance? His typical fedora is 2-3 odds. No hat, which won't happen, is 2-1. I'm going to go with fur hat at 5-1. I think that's the safest play here because the toque is 8-1. He's not going to wear a toque. He's going to wear the fur hat. If he wears any, if he's not wearing his fedora, he's going to wear a warm hat. But a toque, he's not a toque guy. Will any member of the Chili Peppers be shirtless during their performance? Yes is even money. Take the yes at even money. One of them's enough of a jackass. They'll probably be firing up with Marbon Lynch before the game anyway. So, take that. Will a halftime show break the record for most watched ever, which is Madonna with 114 million viewers? Yes is plus 150, but I'm going no, minus 200 on that. Will any player be penalized for excessive celebration? No is minus 500, which is where I'd go with. I wouldn't bet the yes. I don't think anyone's stupid enough, believe it or not, to. Name Richard Sherman. Who will Barack Obama pick to win the game? That's basically a coin flip at minus 110 for either. I think he says the Broncos because of Peyton Manning, personally. Will Richard Sherman be interviewed on the field after the game by Aaron Andrews on the live Fox broadcast? I'm going to say no. It's 110, minus 110 either way, but I'm going to say no because the question is, will he be interviewed after the game? But it has to be about Aaron Andrews. So what if Pam Oliver interviews him after the game? Then no takes effect. So bet no, because you have to have more than one scenario happen for that to be a yes. And it's the same odds either way. So take the no on that. That's the safest bet. What color will the Gatorade or other liquid be that is dumped on the head coach of the winning Super Bowl team? Clear/water is 2-1. Orange is 3-1. Yellow is 3-1. Red is 5-1. Blue is 7-1. Green is 10-1. If you're feeling frisky, bet either orange at 3-1 or blue at 7-1, because those are primary-based colors. I don't think it'd be green. I think it'd be blue more, and it'd be green if the Seahawks won. If the Broncos win, I think the Broncos are going to win anyway, so I'd go with the orange. Who will the MVP of the Super Bowl mention first in his speech? Teammates is 2-1, which I think is the best play if Denver wins. If Seattle wins, the MVP will be a Seahawk, and they'll definitely mention the 12th man first. So that's 5-1 if you want to. If you think the Seahawks are going to win the Super Bowl, you really got to hit the fans being mentioned first by the Super Bowl MVP at 5-1. You got to hit that hard because if you're obviously one of the 12th men, they're going to get the props first. Which region will have the higher local TV rating? Seattle even money, I think, is the play there. That's going to be a good one. Here's a couple of really good ones. Will there be a defense or special teams touchdown scored in the game? I would take yes at plus 160. I think, especially with the Seahawks, Golden Tate's really good at punt returns. Percy Harvin's going to be back, and he's actually the key to the Seahawks winning the game on offense, is Percy Harvin winning the game. Will Richard Sherman get a pick? I'd go plus 200 on that just because of odds. Same with this question. Will Percy Harvin be injured during the game? Must be injured and reported by broadcasters and not return to the game. I'd actually go yes, which is plus 200 on that. However, though, I'd also go over the over-under on Percy Harvin's total receiving yards, which is 40.5, because they need him. Percy Harvin is needed. He's the key to the Seahawks winning the game. I'd go over on all the Denver passing over-unders. Yards, 290. Touchdowns, 2.5. Total touchdowns by Peyton, I'd bet either 3 TDs at 5-2, or I'd bet 4 TDs at 9-2. All the receivers have over-unders. Demaryius Thomas has the highest over-under at 75. I'd go with that. And player to first score a touchdown during the game. I'm going to go Demaryius Thomas at 9-1 for the Broncos. And I'm going Percy Harvin at 10-1 for the Seahawks. I think that's crucial that Percy Harvin scores. Super Bowl MVP, Percy Harvin's 20-1. The quarterbacks, if you're on the 12th man, Russell Wilson at 15-4 is a solid, solid bet for you. Solid, solid bet. Peyton Manning, 6-5. Marshawn Lynch is a sucker bet at 9-2. Marbon Lynch is not going to be Super Bowl MVP. He's not going to reach 87 yards. He's only going to get touchdowns from close in. By the way, if you're thinking of going to the Super Bowl, very important to make sure that your tickets were not made at Kinko's. That's right. It is possible that your tickets were made at Kinko's because two guys from Philadelphia, Damon Daniels and Eugene Flagler, were arrested inside a Bronx White Castle for running a phony ticket operation, according to the district attorney. Not only did they sell tickets to the Super Bowl, but they also sold parking passes and tickets to Super Bowl events around town. Once again, public service announcement. Make sure that your tickets were not homemade at Kinko's. A little quick housekeeping before I go. About a minute left in the show. If you bet on the Miami Heat, they were up 22-4 over OKC last night, but then they got outscored 108-73 the rest of the way. If you bet on the Miami Heat, you get what you deserve. Game went over. Heat didn't cover. They were favored by 3. Tonight, there's only 3 NBA games. The only one I'd really touch is Clips Golden State. 212.5, go over on that. San Jose recovering after getting shut out despite taking 59 shots last night in Edmonton. One of the worst teams in the league, shut them out 3-0. They're in Calgary tonight. They're going to rebound. Sharks money line minus 155. Other hockey to go for. Pittsburgh at LA. Pens on the money line minus 110 and under 5. Got to remember, ride the Kings under until they prove otherwise. Tampa Bay, Ottawa over 5.5. Washington at Columbus. My Blue Jackets are struggling, but that game, Ovechkin's back. That's going to be over 5.5. Panama with a star-studded, guest-filled show tomorrow. I will be back on Monday to talk to you about the Super Bowl. Until then, have a good one at CBS Sports Radio.
From the Reno Media Group, KBZZ Sparks Reno, 96.1 and 1270, Northern Nevada's home of the San Francisco 49ers, plus Tiki Barber, Boomer Esiason, Jim Rome, Panama, and more. CBS.